Hello and welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast. It's hard to believe that it's Christmas. 2021 has truly flown in. I hope everyone is well and safe. There's no doubt about it, it's been a crazy year, not just around the world, but within pre-construction as well. It's been a real roller coaster between COVID-19 pandemic, the price fluctuations, projects cancelled, projects delayed, the great resignation, the new government settling in. Let's just hope that 2022 is a little bit more calm. But I have an absolute Christmas cracker to finish off the year. My guest today has 25 years of pre-construction experience in commercial construction. He currently leads a team of 145 pre-construction folks all over the US, and he hails from the world-famous Clemson University. And he's also been described within the pre-construction world as progressive, unique, innovative, and relentless. It is none other than Steve Stouthammer, the Executive VP of Skanska USA. Now, there's no doubt about it that this episode could have lasted 4 or 5 hours, so we've had to cut down and condense it a little bit. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and as always, before we get to Steve, let's hear from our sponsors, Beck Technology, and here is their president, Stuart Carroll.
Hey everyone, I'm Stuart Carroll. I'm the president at Beck Technology. We are based in Dallas, Texas, and we are a pre-construction software company. We were founded in 1996, and we've really been focused on the world of pre-construction. We believe that pre-construction is where the biggest decisions that impact the outcome of a project occur. And we believe that through the use of technology, we can enable our users to make better, more informed pre-construction decisions, the net result of which is to make the world a better place. We're excited to announce our partnership with Niche. And one of the things that really excites me is bringing pre-construction professionals the opportunity to get certified in our latest product, Destiny Estimator. It's our belief that if we can help you understand how integrated pre-construction and pre-construction data lifecycle can benefit your business, it will ultimately improve the pre-construction services that you bring to your customers. And we'd like to announce that we're going to be releasing this at the end of Q1, and it's available to anybody that's a friend of Niche.
Steve Stouthammer, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good. Just in the prep talk there, I can't believe this is one of your first podcasts.
Yeah, I guess it's not something I've pursued, but I love some of the ones that you've done, so I'm happy to be on with you today. Thank you.
Good. Well, we're privileged to have you on. A man at your level within such a big company, I was really looking forward to this one, so we're looking forward to get through that, and that's why we're going to jump straight into it. We're not going to give you any fluffy stuff. We're going to get straight into the hard questions.
Okay.
Good, man. So, Steve, for anybody that doesn't know you, give us a quick background. Give us an idea of the level you're at right now, who you're working for, and where you've come from.
Yeah, so presently I oversee Skanska USA Buildings pre-construction team US-wide. That is a group of about 145 people covering all of the US. We have people in about 20 different locations. I got here just started my career out of Clemson as a construction management major. I've only worked for two companies since school, this one and the company now known as Lendlease. Probably have spent of my 31 years doing this, probably 25 of them have been in the pre-construction space, just working my way up from the most junior level ranks to where I am now. And currently I live in North Carolina with my family and work primarily at Skanska's office here, but travel a fair amount to stay in touch with our teams.
Brilliant, Steve. Good intro. So let's go back to Clemson. One thing that I enjoyed kind of diving into, the good thing about you as an interviewee is we won't have to go back too much detail because 14 years with Bovis and the rest with Skanska, it'll be really straightforward. So we'll be able to get into the real detail of pre-construction a lot quicker. But one thing I like talking about is people's education, because there's loads of different courses out there, different degrees out there, but Clemson is one of the best. How was it back then? Did you like it? Is that where you got your first feel for construction, pre-construction? How was the course?
Yeah, it was interesting. So I graduated high school in 89, or excuse me, 85. And at that time, I was thinking about what I wanted to do. I always liked... I always liked working with my hands, working on building things. And I didn't realize you could even go to school for construction management. And there weren't a whole lot of schools back then that offered that program. Purdue, Auburn, Clemson were a few that were sort of leaders in that space. I remember going to Clemson, primarily wanted to go to a bigger school, wanted to get away from home, and wanted to work or to learn the profession of construction management, which they offered. The curriculum there was great. I felt it was still developing back then. It wasn't necessarily probably as good as it is today, but it was exciting. A lot of relevant curriculum. I love that place. I don't mind plugging my school. It is a fantastic place to go to get your education, and they have pretty good sports too, which I love.
Well, I heard they have pretty good sports, but I heard it's not as good as Duke. So what's going on there, Steve?
Well, I bet you Will Center puts you up to that. I would say, notwithstanding the basketball team, I would contend that, were every bit the superior school.
He said not even to reference the recent soccer defeat that Duke had on Clemson, 1-0 win. So he did. He was poking fun at you.
they did take us in ACC, but I don't know if you noticed, Gareth, this past weekend, Clemson's men's soccer team won the national championship. So
there you are. Bragging rights back in your court. I like it.
That's right.
Very good. That's brilliant. I mean, we know Clemson, everyone knows Clemson throughout so that was a great foundation for you. Obviously left Clemson straight into Bovis. And this kind of brings us back to the whole pre-construction side of things. There's not many people in our industry that's got 25 years of pure pre-construction. The evolution of pre-construction must have been huge. What was it like back at the beginning, and kind of take us through that journey?
Thanks for asking that. It's kind of a funny story. I remember when I was hired by Bovis and they said, great to have you. You're going to work in pre-construction. And I remember stopping and thinking, well, I've heard of construction, but never pre-construction. I didn't even know what it was. And quite honestly, I think back then, the CM at risk model of delivering projects was new still and gaining popularity, and the need for pre-construction services for clients who are hiring construction companies like Bovis to be their not only their builder, but to help them manage the pre-construction phase, plan the project to have the best outcome. And I quickly learned what it was all about, but it was completely foreign to me. I remember my first week on the job being assigned to a pretty significant estimating assignment. We were doing some work for Rutgers University. We were working on a library project, and it was a schematic design estimate. And I was like assigned to do all the structural and architectural estimating. And I remember looking at the drawings thinking, well, there's nothing shown here yet. And I, And I thought, like, is that supposed to be like this? You know, it's
where's the rest of us?
Yeah, where's the rest of the design? And I was compelled to ask a lot of questions. I think I drove my supervisors crazy those first few weeks, but it turned out, you know, long story short, that turned out really well. I think there's an element of confidence that goes with estimating as part of pre-construction, and takes you a little while to build that confidence that you really know what you're doing and how your quantities are correct and your pricing is reasonable. And but it was definitely new. We were using I remember we were using fax machines. We had printers that had the kind of little tabs on the side with the paper, and it was interesting. I learned a ton. I worked with some terrific people back then, some great mentors who helped me kind of build a passion for the importance of pre-con as we know it. I could certainly go on a little bit more. I'm sure we can talk about it more about the, some of the importance I learned about what happens in pre-construction that has kept me in the middle of that most of my career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt, like even now, the importance of pre-construction within especially commercial construction, it's never been greater. But back then, I would imagine, and even the 14 years you were with Bovis Lendlease, I would imagine you would have seen the pre-con side of things. And Lendlease were probably ahead of their time, concentrating on reconstruction. So getting in there and getting that training must have been invaluable. But even those 14 years and then going into Skanska in 2004, did you see pre-construction becoming more important within the contractor side of things? Did you see it evolving?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I still think to this day, we think about pre-construction services as a way to differentiate Skanska from our competition, and I'm sure our competitors think the same. But the I think there's a certain expectation when customers are seeking construction management services that they almost size up the competition and say, I know you all can build this, but what makes you different? And I think we work really hard to do things in pre-construction that are just above average, right? And that help differentiate us. And and we can talk about some of the tools we use and some of the systems that we focus on. And but certainly, Gareth, I think it has just continued to gain importance. I think we're seeing the fact that customers now are not only interested in the CM delivery model, but the popularity of design build is growing, and design build is, it's just even that much more essential that you have really good pre-construction services to manage those, to manage that delivery model. So 100%, I think it's just gained importance.
Brilliant, I love it. And then coming back to 2004 and Skanska, stepping in there, it's pretty well known within Skanska, you guys are at the forefront of pre-construction technology innovation. What was the vision when you went there in 2004? What did you plan to do? What was the remit from Skanska? They brought you in, they said, Steve Wright, this is the plan. This is where we see ourselves in 15, 20 years. And what made you to go over to Skanska and go, you know what, this is the company for me, but also this is the roadmap for me because of what they wanted you to do and what you wanted to achieve.
Yeah, I would say so. But when I left Bovis for Skanska, it was 2004, and a colleague of mine at Bovis had left for Skanska a couple of years prior. I always thought he had a real vision of where he wanted to go with the business that he was now responsible for at Skanska. And it was, you know, he was very interested in innovating and using technologies to make work more efficient. And I think, you know, I just, I got the bug from this individual who as we were talking through the process of joining, it was an open book as to what, you know, he wanted to give me the opportunity to do here. I also was attracted to the fact that Skanska had an organization around their pre-construction services that was national. It wasn't just local pre-con teams who were siloed. And to this day, we maintain that approach to our pre-con. Like all of, just like you understood from my role, I oversee all the pre-con team members US-wide, and we're quite adept at sharing resources across offices to support our business. It's not unusual to find any member of our team in one office working for projects in another location. So I think we really have a nice business model that breaks down silos and shares resources to the betterment of our business.
Brilliant. Love it. And I mean, listen, managing a team of 145 people, although I would imagine not all direct reports into yourself, I mean, that takes up a lot of time. But one thing that you're real passionate for is pre-construction technology and pre-construction data. Where did that passion come from and how do you see it evolving? And talk us through the Skanska journey of pre-construction data, because that was one of the big passions that you had. I don't know if it was as early as 2004, but where did that come from? And how's that journey been?
I would say this, as someone who had to teach themselves how to be a good estimator, as I was describing earlier, and realizing that what our customers really value is accurate conceptual estimating of their projects, right? They, when we're hired, they expect us to pin down the price of the project, hopefully within their budget, or help them get it to their budget and control it through the life of the project, but certainly till we can guarantee that price. And when you think about the responsibility that comes with that, one of the most important things that you can have at your disposal is information about similar projects. And I realized that early on in my career. But it wasn't until I had leadership responsibilities that I could really begin to do something about that. And so much of what I've seen over the years, even in-house, but from others, is a focus on just cost, what projects cost and how big they were. But knowing, like, at a conceptual estimator's perspective, that what's really important is what makes up the cost. What are the systems that are part of a building? How much material and quantity goes into each of those systems? And if you can harness that information on past projects and use it as a resource when you're estimating current projects and look back and say, well, your foundation concrete density is X, and the weight of a steel frame building of this type would normally be this, because you have 15 like projects that tell you that. And similar with all the systems that go into buildings, that if you can really harness that information, you can help accelerate the expertise of your estimating team and the conceptual expertise by giving them really a playbook to use. And not only that, when you have that information harnessed and can present it visually, you can demonstrate to your customers your expertise in the field, and that attracts customers, right? Like, they feel like you are someone they can really trust, and you'll bring them good advice and good information, and that's exactly what they're looking for.
Brilliant, Steve. I mean, that all sounds simple, but anybody listening to this, whether it's a junior estimator or a senior VP of pre-construction, knows that that's difficult. That's hard work. There's a lot of heavy lifting that goes into something like that. How long before, and I would imagine there was like 2 or 3 years that maybe C-suite or senior leadership were looking at you going, Steve, we're investing a lot of time and effort into this. I mean, yeah. When are we going to see this come to fruition? How difficult were those early days, and what sort of conversations were happening?
It's a great question. I would say it was interesting. I remember year one, asking for an investment approval to have a full-time data manager in pre-construction. And
what year was that?
That would have been 2015.
Brilliant.
And they looked at me like I had two heads. Like, what would that role be?
Yeah. They thought you were starting a tech company, did they?
Yeah. Well, got some seed money to work with an outside consultant to help us create an application that we use in-house. But I would tell you this, it was a lot of brute force, Gareth, early, that we identified the data that we wanted to collect on every project. And we wanted to go backwards, right? We wanted to capture data on projects that have been done for a while. So there was a lot of pulling out of archives, old information. We actually took people out of their traditional estimating workflows and dedicated them to going back and doing data collection for several months. We still largely rely on just a few people to do most of the data collection. The biggest challenge you have is freeing up time for estimators who need to go from one project to the next to actually complete the data cycle for our benchmarking tool. We've learned so many lessons. We do have a full-time team member who focuses on our data tools in pre-construction. We have a steering team that meets regularly to kind of look at how we've developed the tool that we use and maintain it and improve it. If this is of any indication, what we created, I would say on average, it takes an individual probably a week to go back and do the data collection, data entry, the data quality control, which is a huge deal. You know, bad data is not helpful. So that we actually have a complete entry into our system that we feel confident in using to compare to future work. It was probably about 2 years into that where we showed the leadership of the company what we'd been working on, and it was still pretty early, but it was advanced enough that they were like, wow, this is really excellent, and keep going.
Brilliant.
So that's how it worked.
Wonderful. And then 2 years in, as you say, it's at its infancy. How did you visually show it then? Was it the back end is obviously the most important part, but then you get to the sexy side where it's at the end of it, you can throw up a beautiful big image. And we're all visual people. Our clients are visual people, senior leadership. There's very few of us that are able to just look at data and kind of imagine something. When did that start evolving, the front end piece?
Yeah, so we decided to use Microsoft Power BI for visualizing our data. And this individual that works on our team was an expert with that product and helped us take sketches and turn them into real visuals. It was very interesting. We had this idea of like, well, we want a page that shows all of our structural visuals and all of our interiors. And we were doodling on whiteboards, and this individual said, yeah, I get that. And then we would have iterations of going back and forth, looking at how she interpreted our ideas. And it took months to kind of get through that and have a first generation. And then when we shared it with our leadership, we just used the live Power BI tool. And, we had created sort of dashboards within that. And, you know, it's still kind of how we use the tool. We figured out many different ways to put it to work for us. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm answering your question with that description, but that's...
Brilliant, yeah. And the most important thing you mentioned at the very beginning was understanding what data to collect, because there's so much data out there that you could just run around and get your head in a spin. Has that evolved any? Like, have you broadened what you collect now, or have you just kept to the core principles?
Well, as more and more people within our team use the tool, they have discovered that, boy, I wish we were collecting this item or that item. And so we've had to kind of be a filter for what we change and add. Because as you imagine, if you've already got a certain critical mass of projects in the system that you didn't maybe grab a particular data item for, if you decide to add that now, do you make a decision to go back and add it to the however many projects you've already done? Because then it's a matter of going back into archives and finding information. If I had some advice, if I was starting all over again, we would have added probably a handful of things that we don't have now. We've actually got a small team working on what we call our Gen 2 solution, who are helping us think about where do we want to go with our benchmarking tool in the future. And a lot of the discussion is around some of the new data fields that we'd like to potentially add and how we'd go about managing that. I think you always have to think about keeping whatever you've done current and lead and being a leader. So that's why we have this kind of Gen 2 approach. Thinking going on right now.
Yeah, you can get carried away and forget about the principles, can't you? And that kind of brings me to my next question. With the pre-con data, obviously it would be quite different for Nashville than it is in Raleigh, than it is in the Northeast. Obviously, is it up to every individual office or team to keep up with data, or does the centralized data person do all of that for them?
So it's a combination. Our first line of defense is the local office does the data collection for their project, and they have a tool that helps them get it into the national system. When capacity is an issue, we try to bring in a couple of our team members who have a role in the data collection to make sure we still get it done. So it's a combination of the two, but. And I think we're adding somewhere around 30 to 40 projects to the system each year from the country. Not every project is necessarily a great benchmark project, but what we've decided is it's good to have the data on as many projects, even if they're not clean. You know, if you have a mixed use project or a reno addition, and some things are just not as perfect for benchmarking, it's still helpful to have the information on that project, because you almost always run across something that has some similarity to something else. So we're still committed to gathering information, even if it's not just that perfect greenfield job that are ideal for benchmarking.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're almost 7 years into that journey now, Steve. How important is it now when you go and sit down with a client, or your team sits down with a client, and they go and they're able to just sit there with the projector, the laptop, whatever it is, the visual aid, and to be able to say, well, in actual fact, we've built four of these in the last 4 years, and these are the benchmarks. I mean, it must just be so much easier for the team.
Yeah, I would say... And I may be a little humble here. I'd be curious to see how like my business development team or some of our other leaders would answer the same question. But I think it's become very important. And I don't think there's a project that we don't sell this ability on. And I think I've heard many stories as we're presenting to customers where we're talking about a range of topics, but when we get to this benchmarking and what we're doing there, they really like sit up and like, whoa, that's really good. And I could probably make the case that there are a couple clients that we're working for now that simply told us that, you know, we selected you because of what you're doing with data.
Benchmarking tool, yeah. And it's, I mean, you look at it, you were obviously ahead of your time, progressive. I mean, I've got a few words down here, you're relentless in your innovation. that obviously was an entrepreneurial streak within you. What do you think kind of stimulated that, or where did that come from? Was it the way you were brought up, your parents? Was it somebody that you, maybe a mentor?
So I would say I feel blessed to have had a lot of people that took an interest in me. Of course, my parents. You know, my father would always tell people that he was probably the last of a generation that didn't have to go to college to have a business career. He was an Air Force. He was in the Air Force and then grew into a leadership role within Nabisco. And I learned a lot just by watching the way he worked and the energy and effort he put into his job. When I had an opportunity to get my first job, and I mentioned that it was in pre-construction, I very clearly remember a gentleman, a couple of them actually, that were very passionate about their work, and that taught me about the impacts you could really make if in pre-construction. I would say I was very entrepreneurial when I was young. I was the kid that always had the paper routes and the mowing everybody's grass. I always, my wife, who I met in high school, would tell you that, you know, we would always go out on dates and go have dinner because I always had money in my pocket because I was always working. And, and that just drove me. I was in the right place at the right time in a lot of, you know, and one of the things I would say about pre-con as a career is, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit, is that when you're working in pre-construction and you're doing good work, you're right in the center of all that your office is really focused on. You're working with business developers, you're working with executives in the company, you're getting a lot of leadership exposure because they're very interested in making sure that the pre-con it goes well, because you don't really have a project unless you can get it to a contract, and that involves the entire pre-con service. And I think our leaders have always seen that if you have really good expertise in pre-con and people who do that well, those are really important skills for us to have as a company. So I got a lot of exposure to leaders, and I think that helped me kind of move up in my career path.
Brilliant. I love the backstory to all of these, especially successful people like yourself, because there's always a backstory. And I think it's more just as important, because people think that it's like you go to college, you graduate, you go into a couple of companies, and you just keep growing. But there's loads of other variables that kind of feed into the success of someone. That leads me beautifully into the next conversation, which is the importance of pre-construction and how do we as an industry, not just internally, but externally, how do we kind of tell a story and how important pre-construction is?
I'm really glad we're getting into this. I would say, first of all, I think I like to tell potential candidates or people who are interested in understanding a little bit more about pre-construction, just why it is so important. And that I think there's a conception that, gee, I'm just going to be, you know, measuring and doing estimating and all by itself, just doing that. It can be a little monotonous. I think I understand that. I said, but the bigger picture that you have to think about is that the pre-construction service has taken the pre-construction team members from the back seat of the car to the front seat. And what I mean in that is that we are guiding our customers through arguably the most critical phase of their project, helping them steer their budget, create their schedule, build their logistics and phasing plans, think about their purchasing strategy for going to the market. There's so much that goes into delivering high quality pre-construction services that our customers just are, they're hanging on every piece of advice We're doing that while we're working with world-class design firms who also have a vision for the customer's projects, and we have to help kind of find that sweet spot where it works for them, it works for the customer, it's a good business deal for our company. That takes a real skill, and I think that gets lost in the understanding, certainly for people who are thinking about, you know, pre-construction as, well, that's just estimating. And it's a lot more than that. So I think it starts with painting the real picture of what goes on in pre-construction. We have a great little training video that our pre-con team members go through in an orientation. And I've had more than one person say to me after they've viewed it, like, wow, I had no idea how much you guys do in pre-construction. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding, right? And but it's been a turn on for them. So I think it's how you promote it, and it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you say that orientation. I mean, that's a great idea as well. I mean, you're not even using it as a sales tool. You're just using it to reconfirm that they've made the right choice and within Skanska. But it seems like Skanska are ahead of the game when it comes to technology, data. 6-7 years into the data journey, you've got a great brand. I mean, you're national. You're one of the ENR top, I would say, 5-10. So the other part of it is, and we'll call this the three-legged stool as well. You've got the technology, you've got the brand, and the talent is so important. 145 people in pre-construction. How do you add to that? How do you continue the culture? What would you like to see in your pre-construction team? How important is the right people at the right time in the right seats?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say that I've never been in a more challenging period to find talent and to retain talent. I mean, we've grown some really good talent here. So that gives them opportunities that we hope that they choose to stay with Skanska and grow their career here. We focus a lot on career path in pre-construction and in operations and in other parts of our business to show our individuals how they can go laterally and learn the business in all respects. We're actually introduced in the beginning of next year an entire career path learning plan for people in pre-construction positions so that, you know, if you follow the learning plan, it can help you grow in your career. I think a big part of what we need to do as leaders is to show that pre-construction isn't a one-stop shop, right? There's ability to grow vertically by learning the skills to lead projects and complicated projects, but also show at the same time our recent graduates or our young team members how important it is to have some experience in pre-construction, whether you choose to stay there or move into a field-based construction operations role or kind of continue to move a little bit back and forth. When you have some of the expertise that you gain when you work in pre-construction, when you know how to write scopes of work and bid packages for the purchasing, you know how to quantify and learn the relative value of different components of a building, that makes you that much more valuable as an operational leader if that's what you choose to be. But if you also say, look, I want to do this as a career, I'm good at it, I can really help, that is an opportunity we can present. And I think what's unique, sorry to go on this a little bit, Gareth, but I think what's unique about pre-construction, so most of our pre-construction teams, as you might expect, work in our local offices as opposed to working on the job sites. I think that gives us a little bit more ability to offer those colleagues some flexibility in their working plans. We've got a number of colleagues that are doing work from home and then combining that with some office work. That's not always something we can offer on the operations side where our teams have to be on the site for supervision and safety reasons. So I think there's we have to show some of the benefits to your personal and personal life and career life by working in the pre-construction space. And I think that flexibility in work, you generally, if you are not looking to be relocated and move around a lot, there's some stability. And, you know, I know I'm going to my office to work. I might have to travel to go to designer meetings or owner, but I have some stability there. But so, you know, that could be particularly important to say, like a husband or a wife who are looking, who have these skills, but need to help with their children and have a little bit more flexibility in their work-life balance. So there's some intangible benefits about a career in pre-construction, as well as the ability to continue to grow. And I would just add one more thing, that we're also finding that from a compensation standpoint, that, I mean, the reality is there are fewer people that have expertise in pre-construction than there are that have the construction field experience. So when there's fewer, it's like simple economics. There's a supply and demand. And if there's a shorter supply, you may have to pay a premium. And I think we're finding that our compensation that we can offer in pre-construction is as good and even better than maybe comparable positions are in our operations side. And so I think there's a lot of things that could be attractive to someone to have a career in pre-construction.
Love it, Steve. I mean, you've touched on everything there that is important about and what we should be talking about, whether it be at trade fairs, whether it be at high schools, whether it be at universities, or even internally to field engineers, project engineers, APMs, that maybe feel a little bit lost and say, you know what, I'm not too sure that this project management operations side's for me. There is so many more options out of that, whether it's within pre-construction in the data side, in the estimating side, logistics, scheduling, planning, whether it be VDC, BIM, there's just so many options out there. And within pre-construction, the options are much more flexible and there's more growth opportunities as well. So that in itself, that 2 or 3 minutes that you were just talking, is every good young construction management graduate should be listening to that and taking notes. So thank you for that. And then there's the added bonus, and I'm seeing it all over the country, that pre-construction positions, a pre-construction manager is now comparable or getting a little bit more than a project manager. And both are equally as important in the delivery of a project. 100%. I'm biased. I think the single biggest decisions are made within pre-construction to make a project successful. So we may get an operations guy on here to fight his corner, but it's exciting times in pre-con. So thank you for that. And then you mentioned about the flexibility. I mean, to me, we're still fighting this pandemic, the COVID pandemic, but that is the biggest fundamental that will come out of this is flexibility and options for people. How do you find that? How do you manage that? Do you give the responsibility back to the employee or the pre-construction person, or is it difficult? Because there's a lot of moving parts with COVID and the pandemic. How have you found it?
Yeah, so there's a lot to that question. I think we're all learning, right? We were forced into something that I think we've all always considered in this. Flexible work arrangements is the term we like to use. That when March of 2020 came, it was, hey, we've got no choice, right? And I think there have been a lot of emotional discussions at a company leadership level, at a local leadership level, because the reality is we have colleagues in the construction field who are going to work, have been going to work every day. And we couldn't stay in business without their dedication. Yet at the same time, you know, I think we have to consider what we can do with all of our colleagues, right? How do we help our team members who are in the job site? How can we give them some flexibility to manage their work-life balance? And if we can offer things in the office that like where our pre-construction team lives, what can we do there? And I think what we've largely done at a national level, we've said, look, we're we're going to refrain from like a lot of policy making at a national level. We're going to let our local offices kind of work through what works the best for them. Most of those locations have all been discussing and implementing various flexible work arrangement plans. I think that has led to just some great results. You know, one, I'm particularly proud of the fact that through all of this, as we've had more people working virtually, the quality of our work hasn't diminished. The tools that allow us to work virtually, the WebExes and the Zoom meetings and the Microsoft Teams, have really enabled this. I can't imagine what this would have been like 20 years ago. If we were going through this, we would have struggled, maybe not even survived.
That's right.
But I think now we're learning how to do our work virtually. I would also tell you though, that we're at the same time, when you're virtual for a long time, you feel like I'm missing something in my company's culture. I need some physical presence with my colleagues. So we're kind of in this mode now where we're finding our happy space, our sweet spots. Again, if I could use that term, that where most colleagues that have asked for flexible work arrangements, they're going to spend some time in their office and they're going to spend some time working out of their home. And you know what? They're keen to kind of show us that if you trust me to be in a flexible work arrangement, I'm going to do my work really well. And they don't want to lose that privilege, right? I think we were probably all worried at one point, you know, is our colleagues going to work hard if we can't see them, right? Yeah. And I think they're all kind of proving like, hey, I just appreciate this opportunity for some flexibility. I can assure you, I'm going to do good work for you. And we're seeing that. And you know, there's always exceptions, but you work through those. And I think we're just going to continue to do it, Gareth. And
yeah.
Because it makes sense, because that's what people are looking for. And you know, unless you want to be part of the great resignation, I think you have to find those kind of solutions.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you're 100% right. It's given us options and flexibility. And I think, I mean, I am a massive advocate, and you see my stuff on LinkedIn. I do not believe that 100% working from home works, both mentally, physically, employee, employer. It's not healthy. You got to be in that war room, especially within pre-construction and design. You got to be banging ideas together. So the flexibility of 1 or 2 days, or you know, whatever every company comes up with, I think it's definitely going to be good, and it's going to make us get to the decisions quicker, faster, and better decisions. So I'm excited about it, but I have to say, I'm absolutely buzzing with this podcast, Steve. I'm delighted you came on, and delighted that we got through so much.
Yeah, I hope I bet you say that to all your podcasters, but I appreciate this opportunity to talk about what's really important to me. And you know, I'd welcome the opportunity to talk to any of your listeners about this further. It's been a great career for me. I have had a chance to work on so many awesome projects. We didn't even talk about when you work in pre-con, you work on all the projects, not just one of the projects.
That's
for two
right.
years.
Well, tell and you that, what, before we go, Steve, give us a quick sample of, I mean, 25 years in pre-con, give us some of the real good projects, the highlights.
Well, thanks. You know, I don't know as though I can say I ever, you know, worked on the marquee project, right? A big stadium or something that is universally recognized. I would say some cool projects that I've been involved with. If you've ever been to North Carolina and seen the Hunt Library at North Carolina State University, and this is something that we didn't even talk about, Gareth, but that project was built by Skanska. And I was the general manager of our office at that point. So my career not only has been in pre-con, but I because I was a strong, I think, strong leader in pre-construction, I was given the opportunity to run the Skanska office here in North Carolina, which I did for several years, and then was asked to go into a national role in pre-construction. But that's a project I'm particularly proud of. It's some world-class architecture. It's got this crazy robotic book management system. If you ever saw it, it's awesome. Wow. The Raleigh Convention Center. I've worked on a bunch of signature projects that are just more locally known, like the Cancer Hospital at the University of North Carolina and the Durham Performing Arts Center. So those are just some projects that come to mind for me that, but they're all awesome in their own ways. I learned something from every one of them. And again, I can tell you that when I was working on lots of these projects in the course of a year, I had a number of colleagues in the field that were always working on one project from start to finish. And they would always call me to say, hey, what's going on in the office? You know, what projects are... So that was kind of a cool thing about being in pre-con. I was in the pulse of everything, which I enjoyed. So anyway,
that's it. And there's no doubt about it. You learn more in pre-con as well. We're talking, and this is a kind of a misconception as well, that I find that everybody says, oh no, you learn far more on the field. In the field, you need field experience. And listen, you do need field experience to 100% understand constructability. But once you've got that understanding of how a project goes together, you learn so much more from each individual project and you touch on so much more. So actually your development is much quicker in probably after 5-6 years in the latter stages of your career. So, and that's where the knowledge is. And then of course the whole knowledge retention, even people keep talking about the great resignation. I want to talk about the knowledge retention of the great retirement age. I mean, the amount of people that are leaving our industry, specifically within MEP at the minute, is incredible. There's probably 20-25 people at retirement age within MEP in the US and pre-construction, and they're all within 3 or 4 years of retirement. And God help us when those guys finish off. They should be literally designing computers to download their brain if they can.
No kidding. And that is a very real and present issue. And it's you know, we have an aging pre-con population too, which is why it's critical to develop the future generation of pre-construction and construction leaders. And I would never claim to be able to do what our best construction people can do on the job site. And I couldn't agree with you more. Both sides of this expertise are enormously important. I think there's a great career in construction. It can be cyclical. It can be challenging. It can test your every will, some of the challenges, but it's very rewarding too. And it's been that for me.
Yeah, it's satisfying. There's no doubt about it. You made some of those projects, fantastic projects in Raleigh. And that's the beauty of it, to be able to talk about them and then talk about so many great projects. Well, listen, Steve, I want to thank you again. I mean, we're talking about people kind of being advocates for pre-construction. You're definitely one of those people. So thanks for coming on today and discussing all things pre-con.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Steve. Now, Steve did point out to me at the very end that if anybody has any questions around anything, pre-construction, Skanska, data, whatever it may be, he is more than happy to take questions. The best place to contact him is through LinkedIn. I will put his LinkedIn profile, or a link to his LinkedIn profile, in the show notes below if you have any questions. Now, I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a happy Christmas and a happy new year. Really looking forward to 2022, and I'll see you soon.